This episode is brought to you in part by members of the Geek Therapy Patreon. For as little as $1 a month, you too can become a member, help support our growing network of podcasts, and get access to exclusive content. For more information, visit patreon.com/geektherapy. Welcome to Psych Tech, the Psychology and Technology Podcast on the Geek Therapy Podcast Network. My name is Josue Cardona with Kelly Dunlap. Whoop whoop! I was thinking about what to call this, Kelly. I'm settling on something like self-control apps, something like that. Because, you know, I've heard talk about how technology is the enemy. Technology is stopping us from doing all the things that we love. I just read something. I've read a few things. I'll bring them up as the show goes. Maybe a good place to start is a while back, this guy named Tristan Harris was making some rounds on tech podcasts and shows. Have you heard of Tristan?
Yes.
Ooh, okay. So
I have feelings.
Yeah,
about
yeah,
things.
Yeah. So he was an ethicist at Google. The Atlantic magazine calls him the closest thing that Silicon Valley has to a conscience. That's on his own website. So the first time I heard about it, I was like, this is interesting. And I kind of remember your reactions the first time. And as we were doing research for this episode, I kept thinking about the things that he was saying, because essentially he started a nonprofit called Time Well Spent. And kind of when you open the page in big bold letters, it says, "We are reversing the digital attention crisis and realigning technology with humanity's best interests." I just want to know. After all this testing and stuff this week, I came to the conclusion, you know, that people are saying, like, apps and your phone and social media, they're all designed to be addictive. Like, people are surprised. This is what I found interesting this week. What in this world that is in a store or on TV, or like, what is not designed to get you to buy it, pay money, or keep you hooked?
It's called capitalism.
Yeah.
Like, come
yeah.
on.
I know. And so, religion and anything else that has existed forever and wants people to come on down and stay a while. Right? Okay, so we're on the same page on that?
Yeah, so I have looked at this. Even for my job, I had to look at this site and brush up on Tristan Harris. And like on a very, very high level, I agree in that when a product is designed, it is designed to be appealing and to try and win a share of the user's attention.
Yep.
That has been true for my entire lifetime. I mean, if you ever watch Mad Men, like the entire, you know, advertising revolution was that same concept. And, you know, Josue's kicking it old school with like religion, like come here and confess your sins and you will be washed clean again. Like there's always been an appeal to try and draw people in. Like that's what you do. Like that's
flashy
that's,
buildings and gold everywhere. And
I mean, it is preying on this idea of humans wanting to be a part of something bigger than themselves and to be part of a community. And wanting to be a part of a community and belong somewhere means that there is something attractive in that community that you want to be a part of and that you want to reflect yourself. So I don't think it's wrong when people say that, you know, technology or whatever is designed to hook you or to make you spend more time on it than you otherwise might have, because they do user testing and focus groups and lots of different psychological and user experience kinds of testing to make the best experience possible. And the side effect of that often is that you want to spend more time there. Sometimes that is a side effect. Sometimes that is the main effect.
The intended effect.
The intended effect is for you to spend time there. So I don't think it's inherently bad. I think where I start to have a problem with Tristan and people who are this, you know, technology is addictive type of stuff. I mean, I think it's important for us to think about it and to think how things are designed and what the intention of the design is. You know, design is how something works, not just how it looks. So how are these things all working together to create your experience? You know, I think it's incredibly important to think about potential harm. You know, I love the idea of a design ethicist in theory. Like these are things that we do need to think about as we develop. But I feel like, I mean, especially if you go to his website, which is, I think, humanetech.com, it feels so fear-mongery, I guess. Mm-hmm. It's like the only term I have for it. It's like, be afraid. Technology is stealing your children and zapping your brain. And it just, it doesn't.
Has anybody made the commercial with the two eggs frying? It's like, this is your phone, right? On cell phones. Yeah.
This is your brain on cell phones. And some of it's just downright shady. So, for example, on his website, if you click on the problem tab, it pulls up a section that says exponentially growing platforms are easily exploited. And it talks about all the videos uploaded to YouTube and ads on Facebook and things like that. And there's a graph on there that shows the exponential growth of YouTube's content based on publicly available data, or at least that's the subtitle. The actual content that it's drawing on are the number of hours uploaded. So it's trying to, and it's this huge curve, like a dramatic, from 2007 when it's at like maybe one, and 2015 it's passing 400. So it's this huge up curve, which should be really scary. But that's the amount of content people have uploaded. That does not mean that's the amount of content they have consumed or could ever consume. And it's stuff like that where you're taking selective data and you're using it to try and scare people into believing what you believe. And it makes me really angry because I feel like it gives science a bad rap, like that science can be used for bad. And so that's just one tiny example on this one site.
I think it also gives, like, it makes ethics feel kind of weird too, because I like ethics. I'm pro ethics. I'm okay with a more ethical way of, like, if you had a whole bunch of psychologists in a lab trying to figure out how to hook people, and there's also a part of you that's like, well, you know, let's take some ethics into consideration here, and you know, and not go too far, because they see that they've created a monster, and then you kind of want to hold back a little. I get that idea, but it's that monster that is it really that bad? Is it as horrible as Tristan and other people say it is?
And I think that's the tough part, is that the science just really isn't there. And right now, most answers point to no, it's not horrific for you. It's not frying your brain. But then you have something like what happened with Facebook when they had, what was it, something like $80 billion in Russian propaganda ads funneled through the site and spread out into people's news feeds. Like, that's serious. That is something that needs to be addressed and focused and worked on. But I think what gets me most about this is that it puts the impetus on the user as opposed to necessarily putting emphasis on the developer. Because Facebook could, you know, do things to make, you know, prevent giant Russian propaganda bots and trolls from using and broadcasting on their site. You know, there are apps that you like Reddit. I'm terrible when it comes to Reddit. I fall victim to the quote unquote infinite scroll all the time. You know, just by being able to scroll through and never having an endpoint, you consume more. And that's, I mean, there's actually at least science behind that. But yeah, it's this idea of like, where does the responsibility, where does it fall? I think it should fall on both. But right now, I feel like it's almost entirely focused on the user, and there's something wrong with you, and you are addicted, and you can't function right. And so I feel like it's almost very pathological and blamey right now on users. And that makes me really uncomfortable.
In that case, I mean, I think that Tristan, he actually says, like, these companies are kind of predatory, I think. Maybe I'm paraphrasing, right? But my understanding is that he's saying that they're kind of predatory. And so what can we do about it to protect ourselves from these horrible companies that are trying to steal our kids?
And see, that's where I agree up to a point. Like, I do believe that we can design technology to be more proactive. You know, and there's little things that you can do. I think we're going to get into some of those examples in a bit. So I do think that there needs to be something that happens. And I don't like the term predatory necessarily, because yes, they are trying to get people to use their service and be on the service as long as possible. But so does everything in a capitalistic society. So it's kind of weird to single out tech.
Yeah.
But, and again, the use of the word addiction just makes me want to like throw my laptop out a window. It makes me so mad. Yeah. But yeah, this idea that it's harming our mental health, our democracy, our children, it just, it's so overblown. I think he could have a really good idea if he just like slimmed it down. And this goes for a lot of these kinds of like ethical tech design folks. Get rid of the scare tactics, get rid of the extra stuff, all the flashy whiz-bang stuff that you're adding in there about, you know, talking about a hypothalamus when you probably couldn't point to it on a brain. And like, just talk of that, yes, apps are designed this way. If we had this tweak, then this might be a change we could see, which could have these positive benefits. I'm totally, totally on that boat. Like, I would, if I wanted to, or if I could, I would go to Reddit and have Reddit have like, okay, it'll load 100 posts on the front page of Reddit, and then it'll stop and ask me if I want to continue. Because I do fall victim to the infinite scroll. But like, that's something that, I don't know, like as a user, I want, and I want Reddit to give me that option. But there doesn't seem to be something in the middle. It's like all or nothing. At least that's been my personal experience, is that either you are cut off and it's like no notifications, or you're completely in it. There's no middle ground or gray area, which is where I think the tech needs to go.
So you're saying that as a user, you wish that there was a limit. You could like go in and say, and it'll ask you, how many posts do you want to see today? And you say, no more than 100, something like that.
Just a toggle. You know, Reddit, again, for the example, I would love for a toggle to go in, flip a switch that says, okay, load only 100 posts at a time. Because I go to the front page of Reddit and I like to look through. And if I go into awe Reddit, I can lose a lot of time in there looking at cute, adorable animals. So if there was just a one-time switch flip, okay, load only 100 at a time. Or the same thing for my Facebook feed. You know, only load content from the last, you know, 24 hours at a time. And then once you get there, ask to load more. Don't automatically load more for me. I think that would be a great thing that would be relatively easy for these designers and developers to implement.
So you said, now I just think you're agreeing with Justin Harris. This is the type
no!
of thing that,
No. I don't like that. Yep. I don't like that. Yep. Why? Yep. Tell me why.
Well, because you're thinking, you think that the way that the original products are designed is like too much. And you just said you like go down this hole and you don't want to. So you want to set some sort of limit and control it a little better and control that experience.
Yeah, I want a more customizable experience. And I think that's different from, you know, saying that we have to redesign and overhaul everything. I mean, Twitter, I think, does a really great job with the, you know, you can just mute certain words so that you don't see them. You know, there's lots of little toggles in there that you can set so that you can get your feed most recent or most active and things like that. That is what I as a user want. I want more customizability across the board. And not, I mean, so attention-wise, I think it would be a great thing to have, but I'm a greedy user, and in general, I want more control. I can tell you there's nothing that makes me more frustrated and angry than Facebook's algorithm for what displays on my feed, because I'll see an article and go, oh, okay, I want to share that, just a second, and then I accidentally close the tab, and I'm like, oh, crap, so I go back to it, and I can't find it in my feed anywhere. Because it has some kind of ridiculous algorithm running in the background determining what gets bumped to the top of my feed and what doesn't. Or when Twitter shows you stuff like, you know, hey, in case you missed it from like 18 hours ago, I don't care. I don't want that. Make that stop. Turn it off. Stop suggesting people. I want to be able to customize my experience in general. And I think putting toggles on is a good way to do that. And if it helps with attention, great.
So when I use other apps to customize my social media experience, I'm usually using it to make a better attention hole. Right? Like, for example, on Twitter, I'm like, I'm going to filter these certain words out, because if those words are in there, then my feed isn't as fun. And I have lists that are designed to be like more engaging, because it's exactly the people I want to see or the subject I want to see, and that'll keep me there. So I think that being more customizable, maybe some people sometimes would want to use it in a way to like limit their use. But I think, and I'm pretty sure I'm right, because otherwise this wouldn't be a problem, is that people want that hole. Like, people don't want less interesting articles on Reddit. People want all the interesting articles on Reddit. And Facebook is in a really weird place right now because it's automatically trying to figure out what you would be interested in. And YouTube does the same thing. And now Twitter is starting to do it to an extent. It thinks that it knows what you want to see, so it wants to give you more of that. And if that wasn't the case, I wouldn't go to these sites in the first place. I don't want it to be harder to find information. I want it to be easier. And that's kind of the appeal. That's why we use these apps and these services so much. That's why when we're in the middle of work and we're bored and we want something engaging, we go to those sites instead of going to more work.
It's like you take the words that I'm ranting and then you put them into like words that humans can understand. And I really appreciate that. I mean, because I think you're spot on and exactly right. I don't necessarily want less Twitter. I just want less garbage in my Twitter. And I don't want less Facebook. I just want less garbage in my Facebook so that the time I spend on the sites is better and more aligned with what I'm interested in. And so, yeah, I think you're spot on with that. Now, whether or not that leads into more of a time sink, I don't know. I don't think anybody knows. But I also think that making a social media experience more enjoyable is an overall positive. Like, if I'm not seeing sexist or racist terms thrown around my Twitter feed, I'm less likely to have that kind of gut sink reaction of, oh my God, the world's a terrible place and, you know, humans are awful and we're all garbage, you know? And so I think
this is where you and I diverge from the ethicists.
Yeah.
Yeah. We don't think that it being more fun and engaging is bad, but I feel like the message is, oh yeah, like it's robbing you of your attention and of your mindfulness and of your focus. It's taking you away from the real world or the things that matter.
But these are the real world and these are the things that matter. And that's what drives me absolutely up a wall is like someone dictating what is how I should live my life. And this is my teenage rebel coming out. Don't tell me what to do. You know, I want the options. I want to be able to customize experience so that it is the least frictionful for me. And so I think some people are trying to do that with external apps. And since we were originally, I think we've already kind of gone way off topic. Well, not way off topic, just a little tangent, little side stream about content blockers, about apps you can download that would block or mitigate the content that you see.
Which is what you just described for Reddit, right? Like you essentially, that's what you described, like a content limiter, essentially.
Well, a limiter. So I actually did. I went and I downloaded a bunch of content blocker type things. And first off, full disclosure, I couldn't get any of them to work. On one of them, I even Googled, like, how do I link my Twitter account to this app? And there was nothing. And there were a couple times where on some of the media feeds, I didn't remember my username and password. And I don't have a password manager. So I'm like, well, screw that. But I think it's important to help people who either want to use this or people who are developing future iterations of it, that's a huge obstacle to overcome is trying to have something that integrates your social media feeds in a way that it can block it. But that's like five steps down the line. You have to get people in the door first and wanting to do it. And again, I tried like four different apps and quit all of them because I couldn't get them set up and working in a reasonable amount of time. And so that was really frustrating because I genuinely wanted to do the research. Like, what did I feel more productive? You know, what was the emotional experience of having something blocked for 30 or 20 minutes at a time? But I couldn't even do that because the tech was so clunky. And so I'm not necessarily opposed to those types of apps existing. I think if they are helpful for someone to like, okay, if you're the kind of person who needs to just shut the world out and deep dive and focus, and that's how you get work done, you know, it might be helpful to have something that prevents pop-ups or, you know, things like that that might interrupt your workflow. For me, that's not the case. And in fact, a lot of my actual job work requires me to be online and responding to pop-ups. You know, the team that I work for is completely remote. And so we communicate through a content management system called Basecamp.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's lovely and I love it. And I get pings, you know, when people are, that's kind of their tweet or their DM or their direct message. They're called pings. And so I get updates when people upload files and when there's a conversation happening. And so that kind of thing is super important to me actually doing my job. Not to mention that being on Twitter and Facebook is also really helpful for me to do my job. Going to give a shout out to the Geek Therapy Network's Facebook community, where I often find very interesting content and discussions going on that helps actually inspire my work further. And yeah, so it's, I think it is completely dependent on the person. And maybe that's one of the reasons why Tristan Harris and that lot rub me in such the wrong way, is that they seem to think that this kind of, it feels like blanket control, or, you know, like blanket blocking type of thing is a universal need, as opposed to something that is going to be highly customized to each individual person.
I've seen Tristan recommend some tips, for example, notifications being a problem, right? How notifications could be distracting. So, for example, if you're getting on your phone, your Basecamp notifications are important. That's your job. But if also you're getting Pinterest and Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and Snapchat notifications all at the same time, most of those probably aren't necessary, right? And they might be distracting from the job. I get that. I don't disagree with that. I think it depends on your job, obviously. But like one tip that I saw him mention recently was just to, you know, turn off notifications that don't come from humans, for example. Something like, you know, you would leave Basecamp on and you would leave maybe your text messages on because you don't want to reduce your connection to people. The idea is to get less distractions. And I can get behind that. And I actually went ahead and went into my phone and started looking at my different apps that you know, where messages wouldn't be coming in directly from real people. So I turned them off. So for example, one that I really noticed the effect of was my app store. So I don't have my apps set to automatically update because I like to read the update notes. So I like to see when an app is being updated. So I have like 100 apps, but I want to see every single time one of them is updated. And I had it set up so that I would get that little icon in the corner telling me how many apps needed to be updated. And whenever I see that, that is one of those things that is really distracting to me. I really want to go in and see what's going on. So I turned that one off. And that's the one that surprised me the most recently, because I realized that I go into my phone and I go into the app store, and then I see that there are all these apps that I need to update, and I haven't updated them. And I realize I didn't take the time out of doing something else to go do that. So that tip I kind of like. I don't have any disagreement with whatsoever. Like, there are tons of apps that probably it's okay to leave for later. You don't need to respond or look at it at the moment. So I turned off a lot of those, and I like that. I like that a lot. There was one that I don't like, but that I agree with the premise. He said to turn off the colors on your phone. So essentially to make it black and white so that the apps aren't as colorful and as appealing, including the notification symbol. He was saying the reason why it's red is to really contrast with everything else, or really catch your eye, so that when you're looking at your phone, you really see it. If it was like a blue or a green, it wouldn't attract your eyes so much. So once you turn everything black and white, it removes that stimulus. And while I get that, I didn't do that because I like my colorful phone and I like colors.
I didn't even know you could turn it to black and white. I'm now like going through my settings trying to find how do I do that. I don't know how to do that.
There's like some tips, right, that I can find some middle ground on some of this stuff.
And I think that's what we need, though. We need the middle ground. I'm not saying that he's completely off the wall and, you know, it's a terrible person or anything like that. I think he has some very valid points. I think some of his tips can be helpful. But I also think it gets taken to an extreme that negates the helpfulness. I mean, you were talking about the getting the push notifications to your devices. And it was making me realize I am incredibly strict from the get-go about what I get notifications about. And that's just something I didn't even think about, because it's something I do just so automatically. And so every time I have an app or something going on, the first thing I do is go in and toggle what kind of notifications I get. So I didn't even know that I was doing a pro tip right there. It's just something that I was like, yeah, this is just something I do.
See, you and Tristan have more in common than you want to admit. I'm telling you.
Again, I'm not an anti-Tristan. I want to be very clear, not anti him. I just think the rhetoric is too much for me. You know, the use of the term addiction, the idea that, you know, tech companies are out to steal your children and destroy your life. That's too much. I think we as a society can design things that we enjoy using. And I think that's the important part is to enjoy using it. And if you are using an app and it's not bringing you joy, for example, like your Twitter feed, because it's filled with racist crap, you know, then it could be infringing upon your quality of life and your mental health. But that's where the controls come in. So it's, again, it's breaking from this all or nothing thinking, this kind of cognitive distortion that things are one or the other. They are black or they are white, whereas 99% of the universe is, you know, a shade of gray. And if Neil deGrasse Tyson comes in here and says 90% of the universe is actually black matter, Kelly, you know, or dark matter, that's what it is, dark matter. Okay, don't drag me, Neil. But this idea that what's the phrase? Everything in moderation. You know, it's kind of like saying, okay, there's an obesity issue, and therefore any company that makes cookies that uses sugars and other fats to make them more tasty, you are horrible and you need to get rid of cookies forever. And that's not sustainable. That's not going to happen. But then you see cookie companies coming out with, you know, gluten-free cookies, and you see them coming out with reduced fat or lower sugar. And I'm not saying that those are necessarily positives, because a lot of times when you remove additives, they add in other things that's not quite as healthy. But it's the idea that there are options. And I think maybe that is where Tristan and I are maybe a little bit more aligned is, you know, when I go to a grocery store, there are like 20 different kinds of peanut butter and I have options to choose from. But there's really only one Twitter and there's really only one Facebook. And, you know, there are different platforms that you can use, but you know, if you want the kind of content that is currently on Twitter, it's, I won't say the only place to get it, but it is the most populated, it has the most content, it is the most visited, you know, you've used it to create social contacts, and so there's social buy-in. And so I think that might be part of it, is that it's like saying, okay, well, you can just not use the internet. That's not really realistic for most people, whether for entertainment or for their livelihood. So I don't know.
Hey, let me tell you a story about how Psych Tech started. A long time ago, I interviewed Kelly on the first Geek Therapy podcast. And after a while, she saw an episode of Black Mirror and she wanted to talk about it. And Psych Tech was born. So we were born out of science fiction. And over time, we touched on a few different stories in science fiction, but it just didn't seem to fit into what we were doing. So I've been wanting to do a sci-fi show for a long time. And what I have planned is for it to be the first of a number of seasonal shows that we're going to do on the Geek Therapy Podcast Network. So imagine maybe 10 episodes at a time. What I've done is made it a milestone on our Geek Therapy Patreon. So the reason for that is one, to gauge interest, and the other is that it takes time and money to make these shows. So right now we're 7 patrons away from our next milestone on our Patreon, just 7. So if you're interested in a sci-fi focused show, which will be a little different than anything we've ever done, but it'll definitely be one of my passion projects, again, a seasonal show, if you'd like to see something like that, check out our Geek Therapy Patreon. And even if that doesn't interest you, please consider becoming a member there, because for as little as $1, you can get access to exclusive content and it helps us grow the network. For more information on our Patreon, visit patreon.com/geektherapy. Now, you said something that I think is a really good point to focus on, which is that we're talking about it in the sense that it's enjoyable and it's a positive, right? That's where we usually tend to come from. For some people, it might not be. It reminds me of recently on an episode of Headshots, I interviewed a friend of mine. He was talking about how his kid, he monitors his kid's video game playing. And there was a game recently, I forgot which one, where he saw that his son was getting like very angry when he played. So he decided, you know what, like, we're going to limit the time that you're playing this one. And eventually they just told him, like, we don't want you to play this game anymore because I can see that it's visibly making you like angry when you're playing it. Why don't you play one of the other games that you play that don't make you angry when you play it? Like he was seeing a change in his son. And I think that that's really responsible parenting. I disagree with the way that again, some of these apps are making it out to seem like all of this stuff is bad. It also, like, who makes that decision for you is kind of what I'm getting at.
And I think maybe that's one of the reasons that Tristan rubs us the wrong way, is that he's speaking about a topic that is a concern for a lot of people, especially parents, mm-hmm. who are already vulnerable to thoughts of I'm not a good enough parent, or, you know, concerns about screen time and video games. And it feels almost like it's preying on those existing tech fears on a generation that grew up without tech. And so maybe you and I experience it a little bit differently, because tech has pretty much always been part of our lives. And I feel like we're pretty savvy users. And so maybe that's part of it, too.
Yeah. And again, and this is my weekly mention of Jay McGonigal's book, Reality is Broken. The idea, like, if your job sucks, you know what? Twitter looks really good right now. And if something is going on at home and it sucks, Instagram feels like the place to be. And, you know, like, we're not taking that into consideration, that the reason why we go down, I don't know, like, maybe somebody, so I'm sure somebody somewhere is like, don't go to Reddit to find information, go to the library. It's like, no, because Reddit is better than the library, you know?
It's more up to date.
Yeah,
I remember that. When I was a fellow at AU, I was in their journalism program, and that was part of it. And they were talking about, you know, why don't kids today read the newspaper? And I told them, because it's the front page of Reddit, but 24 hours later. Like, it's old. Move on. And they just looked at me like I had broken their hearts. And so I felt kind of bad about that.
Exactly.
But, yeah.
So how do you deal with that? How do I, if I have a project that I need to finish, how can I, and I don't want to do it, right? Which is part of the problem. I don't want to do it right now. And social media is just calling me. One way to address that would be to use these kind of apps, right? This whole thing started as a content blocker app episode, right?
Once upon a time, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. And luckily, the ones that I used worked. And the experience was interesting because, so I read about one in particular called Feedless, and that's what kind of started this conversation. And it's an app, you download it. And then what it does is it's a content blocker for Safari on your phone. So, you know, that would be an iPhone. You're using Safari as a browser on your iPhone. And then once you install this thing, you get this option for content blockers. And then within Feedless, you can choose, okay, I want to turn off all of, like, it's literally just going to block Twitter from Safari. I don't like this app because then you have to pay $10 a month to get rid of Facebook and Instagram. And also, for them to actually work, you need to delete the apps off your phone, because this one in particular won't block the apps. It will only block the information coming into Safari. So this app and apps like it essentially just block your browser. Now, it's funny. I use the apps for each of these things. My girlfriend uses them in the browser, which is interesting. I've never understood why she does that. She prefers it. But with something like this, she could block it more easily. Now, that one's, like, very simple, not a lot to it. Just turn it on or off, that's it. So I didn't like that one too much, because I think, kind of like you said before, it requires a lot of work. Like, I have to delete the ideal way of using those apps and then only use it in the room. I don't want to do that. I don't even use Safari on my phone if I don't have to. I use another browser. So then I downloaded one called Freedom. Now, Freedom kind of blew my mind and scared me. I won't get too into that, how it works and explaining that, but essentially you can install it on your phone and on your computer. I think it only works on iPhone, and then it can work on iPad, so it doesn't work on Android, and then it'll work on PC or Mac. And the way it works is you have a block list, and so you put whatever websites you want to put on this block list. So it could be, again, it already has, like, the default ones, all the social media apps, but you can also put whatever you're into, write down the website and add it to that block list. And you can make custom block lists. So let's say you read a lot of video game news like I do, or technology news, and I have to do some work that doesn't require me at all looking at any information like that, or researching on Engadget or Wired or something like that. So then I'll make a list that includes those websites, because I love those websites. And then you set a timer, and then you hit block, or you hit start, and then it'll start a session. So let's say I'm using the Pomodoro technique. I'm going to work for 25 minutes and I don't want any distractions. So then I click that, and then for 25 minutes, I can't access those sites. So the first time I tested it, I accidentally put the all websites blocked instead of like specific websites.
Oh no.
And I locked myself out for 15 minutes from my phone and my computer. Now, that was just terrifying.
I was going to say, that sounds like some kind of apocalyptic.
But let me tell you, it worked. It worked really, really well. And when you own your browser, you got like Freedom has like a butterfly as a logo. And the butterfly is there. It's like, hey, you're in the middle of a session. You can't go to this site. I'm like, oh, man. And then, so the way these things are designed, because the idea is you're kind of trying to enact self-control, there isn't an on-off switch. Once you hit that start, depending on how bad the problem, like if it's like 3 hours or 4 hours that you set it, you have to call customer support to be able to get everything back. Like it is hard to stop some of these blockers from stopping. And I think it's funny. I think it's of course that's how you would do it. Like you're trying to go cold turkey for this amount of time, right? Like there's no access to it unless you have like a second computer that you sneak off to. But on your work computer, on your phone, it worked. It was pretty impressive and very interesting to lose access to those things and then to be able to control it again for the amount of time. I thought that was kind of cool. I thought that was interesting. Any thoughts on an app like that? Would you use it, for example? Could you see yourself ever using something like
that? That's one of the ones I tried to download, or that I downloaded and got mad at and so quit and ran away. But again, it's this idea that I have to identify all these sites. I have to put so much work into it up front for something that I don't know that is actually going to be helpful for me. And so I think that's part of why I just said, screw this, I'm going home. Because for me, the obstacle to entry was too high.
I disagree. I think it was incredibly easy.
Yes, I did not have an easy time with it.
So I think people should check it out.
No, I mean, absolutely. Definitely go. I would recommend checking it out. I just felt like there was so much I would have to do for it to be useful. It actually reminds me a lot of Chore Wars in that way. The idea of gamifying, you know, cleaning of the house and whatnot, that you set up these goals and you assign points and you figure out win states and things like that and in order for people to do their chores. And I just like, that's too much work. That's already a chore to make the chart. I'm not actually going to do that. But again, my threshold is pretty low when it comes to how much time an application has to prove that it's useful to me.
Yeah, your problem is not self-control. It's patience.
I have a 1.5-year-old. I can be plenty patient. Or rather, all of my patience is being directed into this tiny little screaming baby who's decided that he doesn't want to sleep anymore. So I feel like maybe there's patience there, Josue, just not for not for this.
Another app I tried was Moment. These all fall in different categories. This falls more in the being in the moment, being mindful of your time scenario. And Moment, it tracks how much time you use every single and everything that you're doing and what websites you're on. I think it tracks the websites too. And the way it works is it essentially gives you a report. Like kind of like you were talking last week or last time about, you know, you wish that your app tracked all the food that you're consuming. So you could just see. So you didn't have to input it, right? You would just know. It would just tell you. So this app is like that for phone consumption. This is how much you were on this type of screen. This is how much you were on this type of app. And it gives you, it shows you that type of thing. And then you can. There's also a interesting family plan where it's not just for parents to monitor their kids. It's also for kids to monitor their parents. Because in the description, as I was reading about it, it implies that And I know this is true because I see it often. Sometimes parents are disengaged from their kids. Like their kids are trying to show them something, but they're on their phone. Or the kids want to like watch a movie and they're like, and the parents are like, yeah, but then the whole time they're on Facebook. So this app allows everybody in the family to see what everybody else is doing. And it allows you to set up things like dinner time or movie time. So then it's essentially a blocker for the family. So everybody can then, so even a kid can institute movie time so that parents stop looking at Facebook during a movie. I think this is fascinating. I think we could do a whole episode on that, like do case studies on a few families using this. So I don't like the idea that it's kind of implying that it's a problem overall. But I do like the idea that it allows everybody in the family to have a say. I just find it fascinating. I really find it fascinating.
I do too. A couple weeks ago, we did an episode on Noom, which is the nutrition diet exercise app that I've been working with for almost 2 months now. And right now, one of the modules that I just went through was how to do more mindful eating. Now, of course, being trained as I was, I know about mindful eating. I don't ever do it, but I know about it. And so I was like, okay, I know this. And one of the things that it suggested was when you're eating meals, turn off all distractions. Like, don't have your phone and turn off the TV. And I just looked at that and went, nope. Like, that is our family tradition. My husband, my son, and I, we have the TV on during dinner and we watch like clips of the Colbert Report or Full Frontal or other news related kind of stuff. And it's almost really the only TV that we watch.
Yeah.
And it's also somewhat because that's with our crazy schedules, that's almost the only time we're together. So, yeah, I think it'd be really interesting to have that kind of like no tech rule at the table, or like this time is family time only. I would love to experiment with that, although I'm pretty sure my husband would not be on board.
Yeah, an app like this also relies a lot on accountability, like having everybody see each other and then what, like shaming yourselves into it or thinking or like having a goal of, see, this is where I think it falls apart. Like having a goal of less screen time and then I'm never going to rub in your face that I use my phone less than you did. Like, I don't think that's something to be proud of.
Yeah, it shouldn't be a competition.
Yeah.
Like, the competition we know makes things turn out not nice often. So,
but I mean, like, something. Okay, so I have an Apple Watch. My brother-in-law has an Apple Watch. We share our movement data so we can see who's done more steps in that day or burned more calories, things like that, right? And a lot of these diet and exercise apps, they work the same way. It's because there is some sort of pride in achieving the most movement or like you're moving towards your goal, you worked harder, et cetera. Like that, I can see there's some bragging rights there. But less screen time? Who would – I don't know anybody who would be necessarily proud of that. Like call me up and like, boom, I did 5 minutes less YouTube than you did. Sucker. I don't see it happening.
Now, one thing that you did mention that I am trying to be really aware of with my kiddo is, you know, he wants to watch cartoons and one of his favorite is called Word Party and it's awful. And God, I hate it so much. But he loves to dance along with the songs and it has lots of what's this? And he'll shout the color at the TV. And so even though I would love to use that time to just zone out on my phone, I also know that interacting with him while he's watching that makes it a better use of his time. Because one of the big critiques about TV and kids is that it's not interactive, is that, you know, it's really a one-way communication. So, you know, if he's watching Word Party and he gets the color right, you know, I ask him, what color is that? And if he gets it right, it's yay! And we, you know, it's, he sits on my lap and we watch it together. And so I personally am trying to be more mindful of that. It's not so much I am aiming to have less screen time for myself as opposed to trying to balance how much time I'm having on, you know, on the internet and on my screen and how much time I'm having in like genuine good time with my child. And I think it's almost the same thing. It's just phrased differently. Like it's not about having the least of something. It's about maximizing something else, which I think is inherently more attractive and more positive. Now that's not to say, you know, he's got his own little iPad and we have a bunch of fun little learning games on there. And, you know, today he was able to point to the letter B and say B and I was so excited and I was so happy. And, but you know, there's some time, some quiet time where he sits there and he plays his game and I'm on my phone and I surf through the internet and things like that. And again, it's all about this middle ground, this middle area where we're not trying to push one extreme over the other. It's just trying to find that medium about what works for you and your family. Like everybody's going to be different. Some people can do the mindful eating. That is just not something that's ever going to happen in my house. It's not the culture in my house. And I would love to see tech being approached in that kind of way, especially around these kind of content blockers, is taking into account the different kinds of cultures. And I don't mean that in terms of, you know, like race or ethnicity, but just the different kinds of family dynamics that exist, especially between, you know, dinner time at my grandma's house. There are no phones. You better not pull out your phone. You're going to get yelled at by grandma. You don't do that. Whereas at home, you know, with mom and dad and me, it's totally fine. And I don't think it's there yet. And I feel like Tristan and those kinds of thought people are really focused more on, you know, the boomers and older in terms of who they're targeting for, like, this is a bad thing, you need to get rid of this. And I would love to see somebody look more at younger generations, the millennials, the Gen Z, I think is, I don't know, apparently anybody who's under 20 is considered a millennial, which I don't get, but...
That's not true.
I say that jokingly because at least on my Twitter feed, millennials did this, and I look and they're like 15-year-olds. I'm like, they're not, no, they're not millennials. Not that we wouldn't want them because we embrace all, but generationally speaking. I'm going to stop now because I went on a tangent. And I apologize,
yeah.
Listeners.
Yeah.
I hope you enjoyed it, though.
Every time you go on a tangent, you sound more and more like Tristan Harris.
No!
You guys have a lot in common. Yep.
No!
So my last point is going to be that I think that a lot of this comes from like working with families and kids for so many years and having them come to me telling me what the problem is. There isn't necessarily a problem, or maybe we can do something like what you want isn't necessarily what you think you want. For example, I read that social media is rotting my brain. You know, I need to cut it out of my life altogether. It's like, well, no, maybe we can have a conversation about what's beneficial, what time limits would be appropriate, et cetera, et cetera. And here are some tools.
Mm-hmm.
If I were, you know, working with a family and they came to me with some of these concerns, I would have a very in-depth conversation, and we might even use some of these tools as options to maybe have more family time or decrease distractions during work or homework, but not 24 hours a day. You know, like that's not really what's going on, I don't think. At least for most people, there are certain moments when some control would be better, and having limits. I don't know. I don't think we're ever going to see. I don't think it makes sense for Twitter or Facebook to implement their own limits. They're not going to ask you right at the beginning, how much time do you want to be on here today? I've seen some companies like Nintendo in a game, after you play for an hour, it gives you a message. It's like, hey, you've been playing for a while. You should probably take a break. But it doesn't stop you from continuing.
it's
not going to do that. It'll maybe tell you, like, hey, you know, maybe you should take a break. You know, your eyes probably need some rest. Go walk around. But that's Nintendo. Like, I don't think most companies will do something like that.
Xbox does.
Xbox will stop
for you? They have a similar prompt. If you use the Kinect, it'll prompt you like, hey, you know, you've been working out really hard. Maybe you should take a break, or, you know, consider your health and things like that.
So it will
prompt you.
Rest in peace, Kinect.
I know. I'm really sad. I love my Kinect. I'm letting it go. But I think that's a perfect point is the idea. Don't remove agency. Don't remove autonomy. Like, because that will make people balk against whatever you're trying to do. So it's all about finding ways that work for an individual, as opposed to trying to just make everybody conform to one idea of what is normal.
It's complicated. It's complicated. But that's it for this week's episode of Psych Tech. I will put everything we talked about, including Tristan's website, in the show notes, so you can see for yourself how much him and Kelly have in common.
Oh my God, we don't. We're totally different.
Visit psychtechpodcast.com for more episodes of Psych Tech, or subscribe on your favorite podcasting app. If you haven't already, tell your friends. We're on Twitter at PsychTechCast. I'm at Josue A. Cardona, and Kelly is at Kelly N. Dunlap. And we will be back in 2 weeks. You just listened to Psych Tech on the Geek Therapy Podcast Network. For more about Geek Therapy and our other podcasts, visit geektherapy.com. And for extra content, including our monthly book club and other perks, consider supporting us for as little as $1 a month at our Patreon, which you can find at patreon.com/geektherapy.